Indiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row! Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
And welcome to Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT. The sports leader. On this Thursday, June the 7th of 2018, once again, coming to you live from Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend, Indiana, where the homestand wraps up tonight for South Bend. Final game of a three-game series against the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, the Midwest League affiliate of the San Diego Padres. It has been a dramatic series so far. We'll explain why coming up in just a couple of moments. Also, we've got a big announcement to make. We're going to talk about more woes, possibly, for the Virginia Tech Hokies. They might be without another key player. Not sure yet, but there's a chance. We'll get into details on that. Of course, the Irish will take on Virginia Tech this year. At the bottom of this hour, Tyler James, the Fighting Irish football recruiting insider for the South Bend Tribune, makes his normal 5:30 Thursday visit here on WSBT Radio to talk Fighting Irish football recruiting. We've got a quarterback to talk about and a four-star offensive lineman visited on Wednesday. All the details coming up in just a couple of moments. We got a My 5 question of the day. We got rapid fire. And coming up in an hour, we're going to talk to Becca Huffer, former Notre Dame golfer from Denver, Colorado. She is a Symetra Tour professional. That's the minor leagues of the LPGA Tour. Of course, the Symetra Tour making a stop in South Bend once again this weekend. It's the Four Winds Invitational at Blackthorn Friday through Sunday. And Becca will tee off at 8:58 Friday morning. And she's going to join us to talk about her career and playing back at Blackthorn once again. That's all coming up on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. We're also brought to you by Blackthorn Golf Club and the Blackthorn Card. Just $99. And with that $99 card, you get many great features, including up to 80% rounds of golf with a card at Blackthorn, and also some great specials at the Blarney Hole. We're brought to you by Goshen Heart and Vascular. Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org and Ivy Court Inn and Suites with convenient and unique meeting spaces. You're in with Ivy Court Inn and Suites. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Thank you for joining us on this Thursday evening. A lot to get to, a lot of nuggets. Let me just start with two pieces of information I want to get out quickly, and then we'll talk about the Virginia Tech news, which could be important down the line. First off, we want to make the announcement that the Chicago Bears are coming back to the WSBT radio group this fall. We can now make the announcement that your new home for Chicago Bears football in northern Indiana is Z94.3 FM. So Z94.3 FM will bring you Chicago Bears football and Notre Dame hockey in 2018-2019. So with the Bears in the midst of a rebuild and now getting some interesting parts on their football team, the Bears are coming to Z94.3 FM this fall. So we've got you covered with the NFL. We've got the national NFL package. We also have the Indianapolis Colts for the first time on 96.1 WSBT. And also coming up this fall, Z94.3 is your home for the Monsters of the Midway, the Chicago Bears. Now a piece of information that just came out from Bob Nightingale. He is a national Major League Baseball reporter, and he has passed along the information of a couple of minor league baseball suspensions, one of note to our area. From Niles, Michigan, David Garner pitched for the South Bend Cubs in 2015. From what I understand, he is serving a suspension right now. And Bob Nightingale is reporting that David Garner from Niles has now been suspended a third time for violation of drug abuse, and he has been hit with a 100-game suspension. So if the details I have are correct, he's currently right now in Arizona serving a second suspension, and I believe the second suspension was 80 games, and I cannot tell you how far he is into that particular suspension. But according to Bob Nightingale, this is the third violation for Garner, and he has been suspended 100 games. I don't believe the Cubs have made an announcement on that as of yet. I've been looking around here over the last couple of moments since the details came out within the last 20 minutes. So, unfortunate news for a local professional baseball player, Niles David Garner. According to Bob Nightingale of USA Today, suspended 100 games, third violation of drug abuse. So that's the two pieces of information I wanted to get to you right away. And now, Eric, let's talk some Notre Dame football. We have talked a lot recently about the Virginia Tech Hokies. And they have had all sorts of reasons to be in the news, mainly for not the greatest of reasons. And the Fighting Irish will be in Blacksburg to take on Virginia Tech in October. So we knew that their defensive coordinator had resigned due to an extramarital affair on a recruiting trip. Also, they have lost two starting cornerbacks. Adonis Alexander, academically ineligible. He is going to go the NFL supplemental draft route. And Jeremy Webb, a transfer into Virginia Tech, another starting corner. He is out for the year with an Achilles injury. So woes after woes for Virginia Tech, and might they be adding on to the woes? We're not for sure yet, but according to Andy Bitter, who has covered the Hokies at the Roanoke Times for many years now, this is what he is reporting today, that their starting quarterback, Josh Jackson, his status is up in the air due to academic-related issues. Now, Jackson is a redshirt sophomore. According to a source that Andy spoke with, the situation will be rectified soon. One person said maybe in the next 2 days. Another person said that's optimistic. But as of right now, according to Bitter, Josh Jackson is still on the Virginia Tech football team, and he still has access to their practice facility. Now, 13 games for Jackson last year, starting as a redshirt freshman. He threw for 2,991 yards and 20 touchdowns. He also rushed for 324 yards and 6 touchdowns. So, Eric, we've talked about the predicament that the Hokies are in without a lot of depth at the cornerback position due to these two players leaving the program, and they just don't have the players in place, you would think, to be able to step in and do at least a fairly good job at that spot. There's a big concern for the Hokies at corner. I guess now we got to play the what-if game. If there's no Josh Jackson, how important is he to that Hokies offense?
Well, they have some talented young quarterbacks, but Josh Jackson is a much better than average quarterback, and one of the reasons why Virginia Tech finds itself in some of the top 25s preseason. If you don't have Josh Jackson, again, I like some of their younger quarterbacks. Hendon Hooker is one of them. He was a kid that visited Notre Dame, was involved a little bit before Notre Dame decided they liked Avery Davis better.
Redshirt freshman.
Right. And so,
and they have a Kansas transfer, Ryan Willis.
Right. Right. So I think, but again, Josh Jackson is the difference between, let's say, having a guy maybe the caliber of Deshaun Kizer versus a guy the caliber of Tommy Rees. You know, there's a big difference there. A young Tommy Rees. Let's not even put the 2013 version of Tommy Rees, a younger Tommy Rees. So, you know, you can function, but you're not going to get, I think, at least not by October 6th when Notre Dame and Virginia Tech play. I don't think you're going to have a dynamic playmaker at that position. I think maybe by November you might have somebody that would fit that, but that would be a huge loss if Josh Jackson is out of the mix for them.
So No official word yet. Again, according to Andy's article in the Roanoke Times, we could know over the next couple of days the fate of Josh Jackson, the starting quarterback for Virginia Tech. As Eric mentioned, the Virginia Tech game is in Blacksburg on October the 6th. The start time has not been announced, and that is the sixth game of the year for the Fighting Irish. So something to watch out for. Virginia Tech having a really difficult offseason, losing their defensive coordinator, two starting cornerbacks, and maybe, keyword maybe, their starting quarterback who did some really good things as a redshirt freshman last year. So that's the news on the Virginia Tech Hokies. Eric, we now move along to a guy that we have a lot of respect for who writes some really good college football previews, Phil Steele. And he has a list of the teams that he believes will be the surprise teams of 2018. Now, I'm not sure exactly what he defines as a surprise, but I'm actually surprised by a couple of teams on the list, especially the team that's at number one. It's a team, Eric, coming off 10 wins last year with a defense that's pretty much coming back. That should make them a really, really good football team. Now, they lost a couple of offensive linemen to the NFL, but have, I think, a pretty good plan in place to take over for them. And, you know, there's a chance the offense could still be really good this year, even with some departures. We're talking about Notre Dame. Phil Steele has Notre Dame as his surprise team of 2018. And I don't know, can you be a surprise team on the negative and a positive? I don't know. I'm assuming it's all positive.
Right.
So, I guess maybe we're too close sometimes, and everybody evaluates everything different, but coming off the season they had, it's very surprising to see Notre Dame in the number one spot. If you're number one on a list like this, coming off a 10-win season, then to me, you should be probably talked as a playoff team.
Well, I think when Phil does this, he tries to look at teams that will be higher than what they're preseason ranking are. So Notre Dame generally in a lot of the preseason way too early top 25s. I don't know if you keep doing them every year if they're, you call them way too early, but they're usually between 12 and 19. I mean, that's kind of the range we've seen them. There's been a couple that have popped them into the top 10, but generally a team in the teens. And I think Phil is suggesting that Notre Dame is going to be maybe a top 8 team. Certainly a top 10 team. And you look at some of the other teams on this list, including four Notre Dame opponents, all of which are in preseason top 25s pretty universally.
And we're gonna
Michigan, Stanford, USC, Florida State. So again, I think what he's saying is they're going to exceed what their preseason AP ranking is, that they're going to be a better team. So it doesn't necessarily mean a team that's projected as a losing team have a winning record. It's just outplaying your expectations. For example, Bovada.com came out the other day with over-under Notre Dame's wins, and the over-under line was set at 8.5. So Phil, in his mind, is thinking Notre Dame is going to outperform that 8.5 expectation.
As we sit here today, it's June 7th, long way to go before the Michigan game. And a lot of things can happen in the fall to change this answer. So this is just sitting here, summertime, talking football. But in your estimation, does this year's team have a chance to be better than last year's team? In fact, do you expect them to be better than last year's team? And that's knowing they lost two first-round picks on their offensive line and their leading running back. And, you know, there's some depth loss in places as well, including on the defensive side.
I think they should be better than last year's team because their defense is going to be, I believe, I was doing my predictions in the office that we do for our magazine, our NDI magazine that comes out at the end of June. And I picked their defense to be a top 25 defense. I think they're going to make that leap into the top 25 defense. And if that's true, and I'm also picking Brandon Wimbush to be the offensive MVP, then that would add up to being a better team than last year. I mean, last year's team was pretty good. I mean, they ended up just outside the top 10 in the final poll. And I think this team is going to be in the top 10 in the final poll. I have them going 10-2, playing Miami in the Peach Bowl, which should be fun. And then winning that game and finishing in the top 10. Now, could they fall short of that? Absolutely. I mean, there's a range with them. The thing is, you know, I had a chance to talk to just kind of informally with Mike Elston when I was over doing some interviews over at the Goog today, and Mike is the defensive line coach, and I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I mean, he was talking to me about some of the defensive linemen and how he thought they would perform, and that was kind of the position group that I needed to hear more good things about. I know the cornerbacks are going to be really good. I know the starting linebackers are going to be really good. I think the safeties are improved. I think the defensive line is good, but can they be outstanding?
Difference makers.
Yeah, can they be difference makers? And
it's a big question still.
Well,
artillery is going to be great. There's no doubt about that.
I think so, too. I mean, when you talk about the position change, and I'll give you a little anecdote.
Okay.
Then I'm going to include in my magazine story on him. He's the cover person for our magazine. Mike Elston was helping out over at the fantasy camp, and he gets a text, and he looks at it, and it's from Jerry Tillery, and Jerry's like, call me. So he calls him, and Jerry goes, I'm in your office. Where are you? And he goes, well, I'm helping out at the fantasy camp. And he goes, well, I'd like to watch some film with you. And so Mike Elston leaves the fantasy camp and goes and watches film with Jerry Tillery. 2 years ago, Jerry Tillery isn't making that phone call. Jerry Tillery's out, you know, doing something, you know, goofy that sophomores would do. He's very focused, and I think he has a chance to be outstanding. He has a chance to be. That's the thing. There's not absolutes, but there are so many players with a chance to make a big leap in terms of their play. Jerry Tillery is one of them. Khalid Kareem is another one of them. They kind of cluster into the defensive line. Daylon Hayes is another one. You know, if all those click, and that's what happened in 2012, then you end up with a top 25 defense. They don't have a ton of those that have to click. They have several of them. Because you know Tavon Coney's going to be really good. You know Julian Love's going to be really good. Whoever's playing opposite of Julian Love is going to be really good. So, you know, as you look at this team, the schedule is pretty formidable. There's not a lot of gimme games. Even like Ball State is going to be improved because Riley Neal is going to be healthy this year, their quarterback. That was a huge drop-off. I don't think Ball State's going to be very good on defense, but I think at least they'll have a decent quarterback to throw at Notre Dame right after they play Michigan. I just like a lot of the possibilities. Again, you look at the receiving core, and Chase Claypool has more catches last year than everybody else that's coming back in the wide receiver core. But what it, you know, you kind of see things with your eyes. You know, Miles Boykin looked pretty good. Kevin Austin is pretty camera ready. Braden Lindsey is intriguing with his speed. The Avery Davis experiment, you know, blossomed kind of like the CJ Procise experiment in spring. So, you know, I'm not saying that they're going to go 12-0, but I think the possibility of them being in the playoff isn't something to laugh at. I think that it's within the realm of possibilities for that team. But again, some of it, you got to be lucky. I was talking to our editor, Alan Ashkar, in the office in 2012. You know, if the referees catch Notre Dame with Chris Brown and the other number two on the field at the same time, that kicker gets another kick to kick the game-winning field goal instead of having the miss, and Pittsburgh knocks off Notre Dame likely in an overtime period. That ends their undefeated string. The call with Stanford at the goal line went Notre Dame's way. That could have gone the other way. That's two losses right there. Do you see how quickly you can get from undefeated to two losses? So you need some things to go your way. 2015, what if there's a better block for Deshaun Kizer and he gets in the end zone on the two-point conversion, and Notre Dame wins in overtime at Clemson. You know, is that a playoff team that year? I would think they were, even with kind of their late season fade in 2015. I think a road win at Clemson gets them into the playoffs.
Sure.
So it's a pretty fine line when you start talking about those possibilities. But
or kick extra points.
Or kick extra points. There you go.
Well, going back to your Tillery story, which I'm really glad you shared, that gives us a little insight of where Jerry is
right
now. To me, if he can have a motor and be efficient like his old partner in crime on the Showtime series, Sheldon Day, you're going to have a heck of a year. That kid had a motor.
Right. Well, this wasn't an isolated incident. Similarly, Mike Elston had a outing, I think, offensive and defensive linemen over at his house to eat. Tillery shows up an hour late. Why? Because he's lifting with Matt Bayless on his own.
That's right.
Yeah. So you're talking not isolated incidents. The thing about Jerry was, you know, Jerry wanted to be president. He wanted to be a dentist. He wanted to be an astronaut. He wanted to be all these things. He was a wide-eyed freshman, and I think that's what you go to college to be. But now there's a focus, and he certainly knows what he wants to do after football. He's got a game plan now. Yeah. He went to Japan, got some credits for studying abroad. He's got his degree now. He's going to be taking grad classes in the fall. But he is laser-focused with the football. Mike Mayock came and talked to the team yesterday to kind of tell them about the evaluation process as part of the 4-for-40 curriculum. Then Jerry picked his brain for like 40 minutes after that.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Yeah, so I mean, these are the things that you look for in the off season that say, is this going to boost a player to the next level of efficiency?
Makes me more excited about him being back with this football team, because there's some guys that come back for the NFL, and he wants to have a big year to have a great draft, you know, next year. But at the same time, I think he looks like one of those guys. He is ready to help this football team do some really good things. That's important.
Right. And sometimes you have kids go the other way. We saw in 2013, Tua and Nix weren't the guys at all that they were in 2012. And it affected their draft status, both of them.
Eric Hansen, Darren Pritchett with you. We'll talk about those four surprise teams that are on the Irish schedule tomorrow. We'll save it for then, because we've got to step aside. Tyler James is ready to roll in just a couple of moments with another installment of the IndyInsider.com recruiting update from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat continues on 96.1 FM WSBT with the NDInsider.com recruiting update. Here's Darren Pritchett, Eric Hansen, and the South Bend Tribune's Fighting Irish football recruiting insider, Tyler James.
Always great to have Tyler with us. Thursdays at 5:30 on 96.1 WSBT. Eric and Darren from Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend. The Cubs and the Tin Caps tonight at 7:05 on WSBT Radio. But right now we turn our attention to Notre Dame football recruiting. And Tyler, let's begin with offensive line talk. Notre Dame in pretty good shape with offensive line recruiting, with Jeff Quinn taking over for Harry Hiestand as offensive line coach. And a four-star visited on Wednesday. Who was it, and what do we need to know?
Yeah, Julius Boileau made a trip all the way from Hawaii, an unofficial visit, in fact, with his father. He's a 6'8", 320-pound offensive tackle, so a big kid. Four-star recruit. Rivals ranks him as the number 14 offensive tackle. 24/7 Sports ranks him number 25. Obviously, anytime you get a big-time offensive lineman on campus like that, it's important, especially getting the kid from Hawaii on campus for an unofficial leaves the door open for a return visit. Certainly, you're not always going to get Hawaiian kids to be able to pay their own way to get to campus for a visit, but they've made some visits in the last couple weeks, and Notre Dame got the last trip before they headed back to Hawaii. Obviously, like you mentioned, Jeff Quinn has had a good start to the 2019 recruiting class with Quinn Carroll, John Olmstead, and Andrew Christophic all committed. So there's, I don't know that you could specifically point to any one offensive lineman as a guy that would really make or break this class because they're already in a good spot. But he's towards the top in terms of impressive offensive line targets remaining for Notre Dame. Certainly won't be easy to pull him away from the Pac-12 with Washington, Utah, UCLA, Oregon, Arizona State also offering him. But he also attends the same high school as Myron Tagovailoa-Amosa, so a little bit of a connection there. And sounds like things went well in his visit. So we'll keep an eye on him to see if he gets back on campus for an official visit and lines something up there. I would think that would need to happen in order for him to end up in Notre Dame's class.
So, Tyler, here's my follow-up question. Let's give Brian Poling the day off. You're the recruiting coordinator for a day. How many more offensive linemen do the Irish need in this class?
I think they could go up to two more. I think there's no reason to be shy about it. I think they certainly got some guys in the last class that could help them, but I think to continue to be aggressive with offensive line recruiting is smart because there are a lot of guys that turn out to live up to their recruiting reputation, but there also are a number of guys on the offensive line that don't get there, and it's always good to have depth and options there. So I think, and maybe I'm biased being a former offensive lineman, but I think it's always a good idea to beef up there.
Okay, Tyler, I've got something kind of off script here. You know, I was reading your recruiting roundtable that's going to be in our NDI football preview this summer, and it almost implied the recruiting guys almost implied that offensive line should be a position that Notre Dame should recruit well.
Steve Wolfong has said that.
Yeah, that Taylor Swift could. None of them said that, but Taylor Swift could recruit offensive linemen. My thought is, are we maybe underselling Jeff Quinn a little bit? Maybe we're not, but are we underselling him to the point that these kids still were wanted by, especially, you know, like Quinn Carroll? I mean, they were wanted by schools that have won, you know, more games in the last decade than Notre Dame. I mean, is it just, you know, so automatic that, you know, anybody could be their offensive line coach and recruit? It seemed like when Harry Heastand did it, we gave him all kinds of credit for being a good recruiter.
Well, I think you're underselling Taylor Swift's ability to potentially recruit offensive linemen to Notre Dame. But
Mike Burrell is very interested in offensive line recruiting now.
But I do think you're right. I think it is a fair statement to say that recruiting offensive linemen to Notre Dame, when you're talking about different positions, would be on the easier end in terms of difficulty, although you are probably going up against maybe some tougher competition. I think you're going to be in the conversation with a lot of top offensive linemen when it's maybe harder to get into that conversation with players at different positions. But, yeah, I don't think just anyone could come in and or they could have no one specifically recruiting offensive linemen and they would still have guys signing up. I don't know that it's that easy. So I think Jeff Quinn does deserve credit, and I think he's done a good job. I think he certainly didn't. I don't know that it was a given that he would be able to close on these guys, and I think it's going to be also important to see who else he can get in the class and how well he evaluates guys and how those guys turn out. I think in my mind, Jeff Quinn has done everything he needs to do in terms of recruiting. I think the next question we'll obviously have is how well does he develop offensive linemen, because I think
right.
That's what separated Harry Heastand as a recruiter, because he could show incoming offensive lineman, hey, this is what I can do. This is the path that I will set you on if you come here to Notre Dame. And so I think there are guys that are willing to believe that Jeff Quinn can do that, and that's why Quinn Carroll, John Olmstead, and Andrew Kristofic are in this class. If they believe that Jeff Quinn wasn't able to do the same things that Harry Heastand was able to do at Notre Dame, I think it would be much harder to get them in the class.
Tyler James talking Irish football recruiting, the IndyInsider.com recruiting update on WSBT Radio. Quarterback Grant Gunnell committed to Arizona on Wednesday. So, Tyler, all of the quarterbacks who received Notre Dame offers in the 19 class have picked somewhere else. So, does that mean the staff is ready to send out more offers at the quarterback position?
I would think so. The priority as of late has been Graham Mertz, who is committed to Wisconsin. He received an offer back in April. And I think that Notre Dame has been willing to be patient with him to see if he wants to get on campus. He's become a priority, and I think a lot of other schools nationally are pushing for Graham as well. So certainly he's saying all the right things in terms of remaining committed to Wisconsin, but I think some schools are kind of tugging at him to get him to visit, and Notre Dame hasn't been able to get him on campus yet. So is Notre Dame willing to continue to be patient with him and ride things out until he decides what he wants to do, and either say, yes, I'm going to come, or totally close the door? That remains to be seen. I think it would be wise to get things rolling with some other quarterbacks, especially if he doesn't line up a visit this month. I think there's certainly a limited number of options because a lot of kids are committed elsewhere, but that's not necessarily going to stop Notre Dame from trying to recruit kids. But the later you wait, the longer or the harder it gets to try and convince a kid that you really wanted him as a quarterback because you waited so long to offer him. In terms of other quarterbacks they could offer, I always look to the Elite 11 finalists as potential candidates. Notre Dame has signed five Elite 11 finalists in the Brian Kelly tenure. Brandon Wimbush, Deshaun Kizer, Malik Zaire, Gunnar Keel, and Everett Golson. There was kind of a streak going there until the last two guys with Ian Book and Phil Dracovic that didn't make the Elite 11 finals. So there's guys like Zach Calzada out of Georgia who remains uncommitted, a Brian Moore out of Florida who remains uncommitted, and some guys that are committed elsewhere. You kind of look at schools that maybe Notre Dame could kind of flex their muscles against. Jacob Zeno's committed to Baylor. Brendan Clark's committed to Wake Forest. And Ty Evans is related to committed to Colorado. So we'll see how things turn out and where Tommy Reese decides to turn his attention if he feels like they're not willing to continue to wait on what Graham Mertz wants to do.
Okay, if you're Graham Mertz, and I don't know what Wisconsin has in their class, but if you've got Phil Dracovic in the class ahead of you and the Pine kid in the class behind you, how easy of a sell is that to get Mertz to be interested when you're kind of bookended by two pretty talented guys?
Yeah, I think it is a hard sell, although I don't know that a kid that is as good as he is in the 2019 class is going to be worried about what the 2020 quarterback is. I think the Phil Dracovic aspect is something that could be concerning to him, and Wisconsin doesn't have a Phil Dracovic type of quarterback in its 2018 class. It looks like Chase Wolfe was a three-star recruit out of St. Xavier High School in Cincinnati. That's an incoming freshman for Wisconsin. So certainly maybe the path to playing time, it would be more clear at Wisconsin, and that's something Notre Dame has to overcome when you want to recruit quarterbacks at a high level. It's something you have to deal with. But I think you can find quarterbacks that are willing to at least commit and enroll at a school, and then maybe a couple years in decide that they don't see a path to playing time. But I think it's not an impossible ask, but it's certainly not an easy one.
Tyler James joining us here on WSBT. Tyler, Irish invasion is gone. Two-part question. Number one, why did the Irish have to get rid of the invasion, and what are they losing?
Well, they got rid of it in order to have a big official visit weekend, because the official visits are allowed to be scheduled in the summer months now, that they are going to host a big official visit weekend starting June 15th, so next weekend. And that, in essence, has replaced the Irish invasion as the marquee event of June. Notre Dame will still be doing camps, just not sort of the magnitude or the spotlight the Irish invasion had. Certainly, at least to my knowledge, they were not going to be letting us reporters go to it like we were allowed to attend the Irish invasion. They have some elite skills camps this weekend, June 9th and the 16th and the 22nd, and their lineman challenge is scheduled for June 23rd. So a lot of opportunities to get kids still on campus and evaluate them. But in terms of being the main attraction, they're really going to be able to focus on incoming senior high school seniors for that official visit weekend. Hope to get them on campus. I think it might have been easier to get kids on campus for a branded event like the Irish Invasion. I think that's part of why it became what it was. It was and it's sort of a trend that happened nationally. Schools were creating these events to get kids on campus that happen annually and have a little bit of a buzz with them. And the Irish Invasion certainly became that. So I'm curious to see how things go without that. The Irish Invasion has usually been able to produce a few commitments every recruiting class. In the 2018 class, six guys ended up signing, had attended an Irish Invasion before they committed to Notre Dame, and four of these were back four of those came back in the 2016 Irish Invasion. So the Irish Invasion not only had incoming seniors there, but also a lot of underclassmen that Notre Dame could evaluate and get a head start on. So that's an opportunity that they're losing a bit, although I would imagine they believe that they can make up with that with their different camps throughout the summer.
Tyler, when it comes to forecasting, and we all know that there are bad forecasters when it comes to the weather, but I think you're a pretty good forecaster when it comes to commitments. Well, there are. And I pointed one out to Tyler yesterday that said there was 0% chance of rain, and what happened about 7 o'clock
it
yesterday?
It rained nine times.
It did. So, anyways, Tyler, segueing into your psychic powers, who do you think may be in line to perhaps commit to Notre Dame? Where do you think maybe the positions are that they might pick up some commitments here in the next, let's say, month?
Well, there's a cold pressure system moving in, so we'll have to see how that is. But to be serious, I think there's a...
I'm going to be a weather forecaster when I retire, because you don't have to be right. Okay, back to you.
Back to being right.
Wow.
I think that there's a chance that Notre Dame could add a few commitments before the end of the month, and so there's guys I'm watching like Jack Kaiser out of Pioneer High School here in Indiana, who was on campus last week. I think Notre Dame is sitting in a good position with him. Linebacker Osita Ekwonu, 6'2", 220-pound linebacker out of Charlotte, North Carolina. He made an official visit back in April, the same weekend that Nana Osafo-Mensah was on campus, and the same with Hunter Spears and Jacob Lacey. Seems like Notre Dame continues to be in a strong position with Osita. Cam Hart is a wide receiver out of Good Counsel High School in Maryland. He visited this past weekend. It's kind of strange that he hasn't announced an offer from his visit from this past weekend, but I believe the Irish want him, so the silence is...
When he does announce it, he'll say beyond blessed. Okay, go ahead.
I wonder if he's waiting to maybe announce a commitment when he announces that offer. So we'll see if something happens there. I don't really know what's going on there, and some people I've talked to don't necessarily know what's going on there either. But it's the same high school as Sam Mustipher, so Notre Dame has some connections there. And then the fourth guy, maybe the hardest guy of that group to maybe get a commitment from, would be Zeke Correll. A four-star offensive lineman out of Cincinnati, Ohio. He's got an official visit to Notre Dame scheduled for next weekend. He's been on campus previously a couple times, and he's going to also visit Ohio State June 22nd. So always reason to be concerned when the Buckeyes get a final visit, but I think he's looking to wrap up his commitment shortly after making these visits. Visited Stanford earlier this week, so we'll have to see how that plays out. But I think Notre Dame's in a pretty good position to have a strong month of June and continue to grow their 2019 class.
Tyler, what should Irish fans expect in upcoming installments of the South Bend Tribune and online at IndyInsider.com?
Nothing in the hopper currently. Working on a few magazine stories, but we'll obviously, in the case of any upcoming news, we'll be on that, and we'll see if we can get some names and some guys that will be on campus for some camps this weekend, and we'll get that information out there as well.
If you need nuggets, it's always on Twitter, TJamesNDI. That's the place to be on Twitter for the latest in Fighting Irish football recruiting.
And White Sox whining sometimes, although he said break up the White Sox last night.
See, now you're going to start trouble. Now you're going to start trouble. We have no room to talk. Have you heard me talk recently about my team?
I know.
I'm not very happy. Hey, Tyler, thanks for doing this. We will talk to you next week.
All right, see you guys.
Mr. James joining us from the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. There's an old Cub pitcher walking your way right now. Do you recognize that face?
I don't.
Bert Hooten.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Old. The knuckle curve.
There you go. Threw a no-hitter with the Chicago
Cubs back
in the day. And I remember him with the Dodgers pitching against the Yankees in the World Series. He had that.
The Dodgers.
The Dodgers with Bert Hooten on the mound and Chavez Ravine. So, yeah, he's the pitching coach again for Fort Wayne this year. Always cool to see Bert Hooten at the ballpark. We'll take a timeout. My five question of the day next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Well, we made the announcement at the start of the program. If you missed it, The new home for Chicago Bears football in our market is our sister station, Z94.3 FM. So Bears football this fall on Z94.3 FM. That's also the home of Fighting Irish Hockey. So we have put together this My Five question of the day. With the Chicago Bears coming to Z94.3 FM, we ask the top five Notre Dame players drafted by the Chicago Bears. Not signed as free agents or traded, drafted. That's all you need to know. So I actually printed out the list of draftees for Eric to go through. So this is kind of a tough one because there's people from the 40s and 50s that we do not have much recollection of at the NFL level.
And there's guys like Bob Williams who were spectacular at Notre Dame who weren't all that great in the pros. But I went with two guys tied at number five.
Of course.
John Helwig, who was an 11th round draft choice in the 50s, a linebacker, played 4 years with the Bears. There's not even an 11th round anymore. So I give John Helwig, and he is tied with Fred Evans, and Fred's nickname was Dippy, and he played for the Irish in the 40s. And he's from South Bend Riley, so he's from my neighborhood. So that's why he makes the list. Now I'll get serious.
You sounded serious there. Number four.
Number four, I'm going to go with Chris Zorich. Chris was much more impactful at Notre Dame, but he still had a decent career with the Bears, was beloved because Chicago was his home. So Chris Zorich makes number four on my list.
We're going through the top Notre Dame players drafted by the Chicago Bears. Number three.
Tom Thayer, offensive lineman. He won a Super Bowl, and he had a nice long career. An outstanding offensive lineman, and that's about his resume, other than he's a heck of an announcer and a very good analyst.
I agree with that. We are up to number two.
I'm going to go with John Lujack, former Heisman Trophy winner for Notre Dame. He was a two-time Pro Bowler. He led the NFL in rushing touchdowns 1 year and in passing touchdowns the next.
I did not know that.
So Johnny Lujack makes my list at number two.
And more than anybody else, Notre Dame players drafted by the Chicago Bears, who's your number one guy?
I'm going to go with Dave Duerson. In his career, he won was a four-time Pro Bowler, won two Super Bowls. Tragic end to his life, and he really, some of the study of his brain opened the door toward what we're finding out a lot about football and making it safer now because of Dave Duerson's, kind of sad postscript to his life.
That's today's My Five question of the day from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Tom Noy has a column on the darling of the Symetra Tour, at least not the Four Winds Invitational, Becca Huffer, former Notre Dame golfer.
She'll join us in 10 minutes.
See? So you get to hear more of Becca Huffer. We will have a fishing report. Notre Dame track is at the NCAA Outdoor Championships, and Aurora runs tonight in the 10,000-meter finals. Former Mishawaka standout, Warsaw Golf Regional in high school, and much, much more.
That's all coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section. Coming up next hour, as I mentioned, Becca Huffer's going to join us in about 10 minutes. We'll talk about a little history at Four Winds Field last night with a no-no being thrown by the South Bend Cubs. We'll have rapid fire and South Bend Cubs baseball versus Fort Wayne, 6:50 pregame, 7:05 first pitch. It's Margaritaville night at the ballpark. It could be crazy. Come on down. Top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone! The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
And SportsBeat continues on 96.1 WSBT. Sean back at our WSBT studios. I'm Darren Pritchett at Four Winds Field, where the Cubs and the Tin Caps will play tonight at 7:05 on WSBT Radio. Sean, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How about yourself?
Can't complain a whole lot. We had a little announcement earlier as we've got Chicago Bears football coming to our sister station, Z94.3 FM this year. So Bears fans, you have a chance to listen to the Bears on the radio this year on Z94.3 FM. And, of course, we've got Colts football on 96.1 WSBT for the first time in 2018. So the local teams are covered all in-house with the WSBT radio group, and maybe we're getting the Bears at the right time. Of course, we had the Bears for many, many years, and then it just became more difficult once we acquired the Notre Dame contract to get their games in, with Notre Dame playing a lot of basketball games on Sunday. True. So we gave up the Bears a few years ago, and we're very happy with a spot open on Z94.3 FM. We can bring Bears football back to the WSBT radio group, and we will bring you the Mitchell Trubisky era as it unfolds.
That's right. And hopefully, on the other side with the Colts, hopefully the Andrew Luck era will continue at some point, but who knows if he's ever going to throw again. But, it's exciting to have Mitch Trubisky in a new era, new coaching staff, and the whole thing, and now a new home for the Chicago Bears over on Z94.3 as well.
Yeah, I read something today that maybe the Colts are being more optimistic publicly than there is reason to be about Andrew Luck. So we won't know until fall camp gets underway what Luck is able to do. So again, Bears football coming to our sister station, Z94.3 FM. Bob Nightingale, national reporter for MajorLeagueBaseball.com, reported this earlier this afternoon. I've been doing the show. I've been trying to look up more details as the show's gone on, but it's just tough to get much done. But Bob is reporting that Niles, Michigan native David Garner, who pitched for the South Bend Cubs in 2015, a part of the Cubs organization, has been suspended for a third time for drug abuse, and it is a 100-game suspension. And I've been told that he's in Arizona right now still serving the second one. So I'm not sure how much is left on the second one. If that statement is accurate, David Garner will not be pitching on a minor league diamond for some time. And you have to wonder how much longer the Cubs organization will stay with him, knowing this is now a third time. Now, this is not performance-enhancing drugs. That's a different game total you get. And you can be kicked out of baseball for that after three tries, if I'm not mistaken. I was told today, because I asked the question to some people that know, apparently you have up to five times before you're banned for just drug abuse. So it could be amphetamines, I mean, whatever the case may be. I don't know what it was with David, but this is Bob Nightingale reporting this. I'd like to see if the Cubs have confirmed it. I just haven't had a chance. But he says Garner is done for 100 games, and if he is still serving the second one, he's got a long, long time to wait. He is done until next year, a good portion of next year, as a matter of fact.
That's too bad. Really talented guy. And I wasn't it back around spring training that the second one came up? It seemed like right before the season started, if I remember correctly. The one that you were talking about that he's currently serving right now. And I don't think it's been that long since that one came down. So it's too bad, and hopefully he gets himself kind of figured out here in the near future.
All right, so that's the latest there on a local kid who pitched for South Bend a couple of years ago, pitching close to home. And now apparently he's going to have to sit for a long, long time. And I think for his sake, let's hope the Cubs stick with him, because you never know if another organization will take a chance on someone that's on strike three in this particular spot. All right, we're going to hopefully be joined here in just a moment by Becca Huffer, Notre Dame golfer from 08 to 12. She's playing in the Symetra Tour, Four Winds Invitational. The Symetra Tour back at Blackthorne for a seventh year, and it will be Friday through Sunday, as they'll be going off both 1 and 10 on Friday and Saturday. and $150,000 purse for the Four Winds Invitational. And Becca playing in the tournament again. She's played in it for several years now, has missed the cut the last couple of years, but has a 68 at Blackthorn earlier in her professional career. So hopefully we will catch up with Becca in just a couple of moments. So while we wait for that phone call, why don't we recap what happened last night at Four Winds Field as South Bend and Fort Wayne played game two of a three-game series. It's been kind of a fun series from a South Bend standpoint. Game one of the series on Tuesday, South Bend walked off Fort Wayne 8-7 in 11 innings on a base hit by Chris Singleton, scoring Rafael Narea. The Cubs were down two runs in the 10th and a run in the 11th and won 8-7. Also need to mention they were up 4-1 late in the ballgame and could not close it out, but South Bend recovered for a walk-off win, their second walk-off win of the year. And then last night, Riley Lacy was on the mound for the South Bend Cubs, and as I've documented throughout the year, the starting pitching has been great. Well, it was off the chart last night, as the Cubs offense got the Cubs in position to win the game by getting off to a 4-0 lead after three innings. Riley Lacy took that particular lead, and boy, did he take advantage. Seven innings, no hits, no runs, two walks, six strikeouts, had a really good breaking ball, good placement with the fastball. 96 pitches, 61 strikes for the Creighton product. So the Cubs had a no-hitter going to the eighth inning. Ben Hecht then took over, a right-hander out of the Cubs' bullpen. He faced the bottom three of the Fort Wayne order in the eighth inning. Luis Almanzar flew out to left. Nick Fite popped up to the shortstop, and Robbie Podorsky grounded out the third. So the Cubs had a no-hitter going to the ninth inning. They were leading 7-0. So Hecht then had to go through the top of the order. First, it was Jason Rosario. He struck out looking. Esteyari Ruiz then hit a bullet to center field. The center fielder, Zach Davis, leaped at the last second and made the catch for out number two. And the Cubs were one out away from a no-hitter. Tirso Ornelas was at the plate for Fort Wayne. Ben Hecht was on the mound for the South Bend Cubs. And the count was 3-2. And this is how it sounded last night on 96.1 WSBT. Hecht versus Ornelas. 3-2 pitch. Breaking ball. Strike three called. A no-hitter. Riley Lacy and Ben Hecht have combined to no-hit the Fort Wayne Tin Caps. Cubs win 7-0. And the Cubs on the field celebrating in the middle of the diamond. The franchise's first no-hitter since 2014.
And we're back.
Paul, yeah, I can't hear the sound, guys. Sorry.
Not sure what happened, but it was on the air anyway. Sorry you couldn't hear that. We're having one of those days, it looks like. But it sounded very exciting as they closed things out last night.
Yeah, Lacy and Hecht were good last night. The offense was really good. So, you know, South Bend's not going to make the playoffs in the first half, but they have played better baseball lately. That's now four consecutive series wins, and they have a chance to get to the 500 mark for the first time since May. They have a chance to match their longest winning streak of the year, five games, and it's been a good run for South Bend. They just played so poorly in the first part of May that it took them out of playoff contention. So we're kind of playing out the string here in the first half, and maybe some good play will lead to a good start to the second half as South Bend will look to make the playoffs here in 2018. All right, we have tried Becca Huffer three times, and she is not answering the phone, so it looks like that will have to be scrapped, and we're going to have to move along from that interview. So good luck to Becca. Notre Dame golfer, 08 through 12 from Denver, Colorado, $77,000 in career earnings. Symetra Tour professional will play in this weekend's Four Winds Invitational. She tees off at 8:58 Friday morning. If you're interested, three finishes in the top 22 so far this year for Becca. We'll take a timeout. We'll get rapid fire started a little early next on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Right now, At 23 minutes after 6 o'clock, here is Sean Steyers with Rapid Fire.
And a football question to start us off. 86 days to go until the start of Notre Dame's football season. So let's do a number 86 Alizé Mack question. Fill in the blank. You expect blank from Alizé Mack this season.
Well, I kind of expect him to be a difference-making player on the offensive side of the football. Not a starter, not a contributor. But it's time for this very talented tight end to be a difference maker for this team. The breakout moment has not occurred yet. I remember as a freshman had the big catch against Temple in the fourth quarter, leading to a nice road victory over the Owls. Then he missed a season. Then last year just did not have the impact I expected. I hope I don't have too high of expectations on Alizé Mack, but to me, he still is a matchup headache. His offensive coordinator is the tight end coach. So you would think if Alizé's on his game, he'll have many opportunities to make plays. So I just don't want him to be a starter and a contributor. I want him to be a difference maker.
Yeah, that's a good point. He had 19 catches for 359 yards and a touchdown last year. And you're right. I mean, that was contributor, but that was not difference maker type production that he had. How much of it was him with some of the drops? How much of it was Brandon Wimbush being able to get him the ball consistently? I like what you said about the matchups, though, because when you look at the fact that you've got Chase Claypool and Miles Boykin on the outside, who should draw a lot of attention from defenses, should leave some favorable matchups for Alizé Mack and the other tight ends as well, for that matter, but specifically for Alizé Mack this upcoming season. And I kind of went back and looked at the top receiving tight ends in each season. Who was the top tight end receiving-wise in each of Brian Kelly's first eight seasons? And I think I would expect something along the lines of what Troy Nicholas did in 2013 when he led the tight end group, 32 receptions, just under 500 yards, and five touchdowns. Would you say that would be along the lines of what we should expect from Alizé Mack, or the least we should expect from Alizé Mack?
I'd like a little more, but I think that's fair.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean,
I'm thinking big.
Okay. So really big from Alizé Mack. This is a guy, so you're saying he should be closer to maybe Tyler Eifert type production anyway, when he had 50 catches, right around there? Or somewhere in between 30 and 50, 40
if
maybe.
He gives me 40 to 50, I think that is in the ballpark of what I'm looking for. Okay. But I want those catches to be in big moments, too. Yeah. I just don't want 25 catches in the fourth quarter and mop-up time or whatever the case may be. I want them on third down and 8, third down and 12 in the red zone. I want those catches to mean something.
Big time. Okay.
So I got a high ceiling, high expectations.
And I think that, again, because the 19 for 359 that he had last year was a big increase in production compared to Durham Smythe, who had 9 catches for 112 yards. He led tight ends the year before when Mack was out. So, I mean, there was a big jump in production, but I agree with what you're saying. He should be sort of a central figure on the offense, not just a role guy out there kind of running around. Okay. I can buy that for sure. All right. On the same day, Notre Dame basketball announced it'll host the Gotham Classic with Illinois, Chicago, Radford, and William & Mary all participating this upcoming basketball season. The South Bend Tribune's Tom Noy today says the Irish will play a closed-door preseason scrimmage against Cincinnati in Indianapolis. So, which of those two things, Darren, moves the needle more for you?
I would say the Cincinnati scrimmage, just because Cincinnati has been a great program the last few years in the American. Nick Cronin, high-energy guy. Sounds like there's still a relationship with Mike Bray.
Yeah.
So, with this young team that Notre Dame has, the opportunity to go play a team like that, I think, is a great learning experience. I mean, the Gotham Classic, there's not a game there that gets you excited. When I saw right. UIC, I thought of Loyola.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, oh, we get the Final Four, and then I'm like, oh, it's UIC. So I got excited for a second. But, no, I mean, the Gotham Classic, it's great. They've got 4 games at home, and you know what? They need a lot of home games with a younger bunch this year, so totally get that. But those 4 opponents don't move the needle. But I tell you what, that Cincinnati scrimmage, that's great to hear.
I agree. I mean, the cool thing about the Gotham Classic, I guess, is they've played basketball for 111 years at Notre Dame. This is going to be the first time that they've actually hosted an entire in-season tournament event, because usually they'll be part of one of these events and they'll get a home game against one of these kind of teams, a UIC or a William & Mary, whoever, and then they'll go to Brooklyn and maybe play a more marquee type opponent off campus. So even though it's not going to be a big marquee name, it's kind of cool that this will be the first time ever in over 100 years that they'll actually host an entire event like this. But I agree with what you're saying. I think it's cool. They're going to get to go to Indianapolis, and with a young team like they're going to have, they're going to get to go and work on some things against a quality Division I opponent behind closed doors. I mean, they'll get to, because they were a number two seed in the NCAA tournament last year. So pretty valuable for a team that's going to be one of the youngest that Mike Bray has ever had. So I agree with you. The scrimmage, I think, is the cool thing. They haven't done anything like this before.
I can't remember if it was saying this to you on the interview on WSBT Radio a couple of weeks ago or if it was during a press conference, but he made the mention with a lot of young players having key roles on this year's team, there's going to be times they're going to throw the ball out of bounds. And maybe they'll get that out of their system by taking on Cincinnati, who gets in your face and plays very aggressive defense, so that'll be a really good learning experience.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. All right. As we talked about earlier, the Chicago Bears are going to be on our sister station, Z94.3, this fall. And the Indianapolis Colts will be right here on WSBT. A couple of new moves and new NFL teams that we're going to have on our stations here. So I ask you, Darren Pritchett, which of those two teams will be a playoff team first?
See, again, it goes back to Andrew Luck.
It does. Everything goes back to him, doesn't it?
I mean, you look at it this way. Which team has the best chance to have success within their division right now? The answer is the Colts.
Yeah.
Although the Texans have a chance to be really good. The Jaguars are coming off a great year. But I just see the Vikings and the Packers as high-end NFC teams, and, you know, we'll see about the Lions. They need to figure out a running game at some point. So the path of least resistance in a division, I give to the Colts. Boy, it's tough. It's really, really tough. If it's Luck playing, I think the answer is easy. I would say the Colts. But you know what? I'm going to say, I'm gonna go with the Bears and just assume Luck may not be as healthy as we think right now.
Okay.
And I'm not saying the Bears are going to make the playoffs this year by saying that, but you would think with the way they have things going right now, by next year, at the very least, they should be in contention for one of those wild card spots in the NFC.
So you're saying if Andrew Luck is healthy and comes back, it's the Colts, but if he's not,
right,
it's the Bears.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, that's pretty... I mean, that doesn't take a rocket scientist to say that, but, I mean, that's what it comes down to.
No, it makes sense because...
Control play.
Yeah, I mean, if Luck isn't healthy, they've got to go out and find a franchise quarterback in the draft next year. And, I mean, really, you're talking... Trubisky still has to prove that he is a franchise quarterback, prove that he's worthy
sure.
of that pick in the investment that they made with him last year. So that is still yet to be seen. If Andrew Luck is healthy, we know that he's the franchise guy, but is he going to be healthy enough to go out there and do it? Because I think I saw probably something that you were talking about. It looks like they're not even confirming that he's throwing the football yet. Mm-hmm. Training camp's going to be rolling around here in about a month or so. But, I mean, they each play in divisions where within a couple of years at least they should be able to be competitive and in the mix, because the NFC North has been won by either the Packers or the Vikings for the last 7 years, and even Green Bay slumped last year. But then you look at the AFC South, where the Colts are, a different team has won that division in each of the past 4 years, including the Colts 4 years ago. So I agree with the line of thinking that you had. Though, if Andrew Luck is indeed healthy, I would go with the Colts But if not, I would go with Mitch Trubisky. But again, he still has to prove that he's a franchise guy. So they both got things to kind of figure out other than the quarterback, but I would definitely go with the Bears if Luck is not healthy. And Darren, it looks like we have Becca Huffer with us on the line and ready to go.
Okay, very good. Becca played at the University of Notre Dame 2008 through 2012 from Denver, Colorado, $77,000 in career earnings, and she's back in South Bend for the Four Winds Invitational at Blackthorn this weekend. I know she's had a lot of media responsibilities this week. Beck, I guess we kind of still call you ours as you're with your Notre Dame roots, so we greatly appreciate you adding one more to your list, and thanks for joining us for a couple of moments. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Greatly appreciate your time. I know in the past you've shot a 68 at Blackthorn, a 4-under par round at the Four Winds Invitational. I know last weekend watching the Memorial, they say it's a second shot golf course. When you think about Blackthorn, is there anything that stands out for you that you need to do well in order to have success this weekend at that golf course?
Yeah, I think for me it's course management on some of the holes. It can kind of sucker you into putting you into some bad places. So, and I try and set yourself up for good shots into the green and make the putts when you can, and you know, get some low numbers.
Becca, this is your fifth year on the tour now. I'm curious, what's the best maybe advice that you've got about playing professionally?
You know, what I've learned is that I just have to play my own game. Not worry too much about the technical side and just get out there and have fun and, you know, not worry about how I'm going to get the birdies and just get them.
Becca Huffer, our guest, a Metro Tour player playing at Blackthorn this weekend, a Notre Dame grad. Let's go back to your Notre Dame days for a moment. See, you were at Notre Dame before the Irish joined the ACC, so it's a whole different way of playing golf now for the Irish. Two-part question, how much did college golf prepare you for what you're doing now? And I don't want to talk poorly about the competition you played then, but the ACC is a little bit of a different animal. Would you have preferred to possibly play in the ACC in some of those southern environments against a little better competition?
I guess to start out, when I was at college, I learned a lot about my own game and, you know, the mental side and just kind of keeping things together, even though you got a whole lot of things going on with schoolwork and golf and the team. The second part, I think it's great that they're in the ACC now. There's so many good golf schools. There really was only a few of us in the Big East that really competed against each other. So it's great to see them have the competition and it week in and week out there on ACC.
Well, the weather would have been a little better too.
That's exactly right. Becca, what's the toughest thing about playing week in and week out in a professional environment?
You know, I think it's just making sure you take some time to yourself. You know, make sure you take a day off, because technically we could play every single day, week in, week out, but that's sometimes just too much physically and mentally. So knowing yourself and knowing what you need to do to be successful that week.
Becca Huffer, Notre Dame alum, Symetra Tour player, joining us on WSBT Radio. So, Becca, we've followed the Four Winds Invitational now for 7 years, and it's been really interesting to watch you ladies play, because you watch the LPGA Tour on TV, and there's not a whole lot of difference between the two tours. Obviously, you got some of the bigger names on the LPGA Tour, but I watch you guys play, and the level of ball striking is very similar. The distance off the tee is very similar. So I guess I'm kind of curious, what is the difference? I mean, what is going to take to make that next step up to the LPGA Tour? Is it short game, or is it anything in particular that you think is the difference between the two tours?
You know, you're right. There's so many good players on both tours. You know, I'm sure most of the girls on Symetric Tour could be competing just as well on LPGA, but it's just getting to that next step. So consistency. If you want to finish in that top 10 at the end of the year, and consistency is the way to do it. So everyone's, you know, really putting, whoever gets the ball in the hole week in, week out, gonna get there.
You've played at Blackthorn before. Is there an advantage to having experience in a course like this?
Yeah, I think sometimes. Kind of what I was talking about earlier with course management. I know I've kind of screwed up some holes before in the past. And hopefully I've learned from my mistakes on that.
We're joined by Becca Huffer, Notre Dame golfer, playing at Blackthorn this weekend. Becca, how would you summarize your season to date? I noticed, looking up some of your numbers, three finishes in the top 22 so far this year. So how would you assess your play, and what part of your game is working really well coming into this week?
Yeah, it's been a lot better start for me this year, for sure. Coming into this tournament, I've had a lot better scores and better finishes. So overall, my game just feels a lot more solid. I've really been trying just to focus on not too many mechanics this year and just go out and play when the tournament starts and, you know, not worry about it from there.
Again, with you being a Notre Dame graduate and you're back here, you've been back here before, but what would it mean to you to be able to pick up your first career victory kind of in Notre Dame's backyard, being back in town?
Oh, that would be awesome. I'd love that. Hopefully that'll be the case, but hopefully just get some nice scores going and see where the, you know, where the putts fall.
Well, I would love to get your insight on this, because you know Warren Golf Course at Notre Dame like the back of your hand, and
yeah.
Warren Golf Course is going to be hosting the U.S. Senior Open in 12 months. Now, you've seen that
yeah.
golf course set up at a championship level, but this is going to be the USGA coming in. I know they're changing the routing of the golf course, and they've tweaked a few things. Just give me your best guess. What type of scores do you think these U.S. seniors are going to be playing in the Open at Warren in about 12 months?
You know, what I've always thought about the Warren is that it's sneaky hard. So, you know, if you put it in the right place, especially on the greens out there, you can get some low numbers. But, you know, same, you know, put it in the wrong place above the hole on some of those holes, and big numbers can happen. And with the heather and everything, playing links style. So, I don't know, you know, they're obviously great players. I'll be really curious to see it. I'm sure it won't be a super low number, but if the wind picks up.
Sure. Do you think 65 is a possible score in one of the rounds?
I could see them shooting that if, you know,
okay.
pin placements. And, yeah, if you get around the course, it's doable.
I know the USGA has, along with Coors and Crenshaw, they've expanded the 17th green. They've made it a little bigger, so that par 5 is going to look a little different. Knowing that they've expanded that
yeah.
green, how much easier is that hole now, if easier is the right word to use?
That one was definitely, it was such a small green, so even though it was we played it as a par 5, you still had to really place the shot in the right spot, so that should be interesting. I'm sure they're playing that as a par 4 for the Senior Open, and it can be tough.
Yeah. Well, Becca, finally, along those same lines, if you had a senior player come up to you and ask you, what is the toughest hole in the golf course? What is the one hole I need to be careful and make sure I walk away with par? What hole would you say?
You know, I've always thought number 16. It's a short par 4, but you can get in trouble, and it's not an easy green. So I was always happy, you know, getting away with par on that hole. Birdie's a bonus. Then there's a few more on the back 9. One coming to mind is number 12, was always kind of
okay.
long. Also number 6. That wasn't one of my favorite holes. So, just from personal, like how it sets up with your eye, but those are probably my toughest holes out there.
Becca,
it'll be fun to see how they play it.
Sure. Becca, John Foster's a good friend, so I'm going to make sure he changes number 6 just for you so you can go back and enjoy it next time. So if I'd have known this sooner, I would have changed it many, many years ago. So we'll work on that for you. Well, Becky, you tee off at 8:58 Friday morning at Blackthorn, and we really greatly appreciate your time. I know you've had a lot of media requests this week, so thank you for doing one more. Great to have you back in South Bend, and we wish you best of luck this week at Blackthorn and throughout the rest of your season.
Thank you so much.
That's Becca Hufford, Notre Dame golfer, 08 through 12 from Denver, Colorado. Symetra Tour professional with over $77,000 in career earnings. And once again, playing in the Four Winds Invitational at Blackthorn this weekend. 8:58 or tee time Friday morning. Free admission to Blackthorn this weekend. You can park by the soccer fields and walk into Blackthorn there and enjoy some tremendous professional golf. These Symetra Tour players are very accessible. You can talk to them if you have a youngster that is interested in the game of golf. This is a great opportunity. I'm not being paid by Blackthorn or Tim Firestone to say this, but having been out there, if you have a youngster, take them out there, let them enjoy the golf. And again, you can communicate with the golfers after the round, get an autograph, take a picture, and just talk about the game of golf. It is a great opportunity for youngsters in our area. Right now it is 16 minutes in front of 7 o'clock. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you on WSBT Radio. Do you have any more rapid fire as we just kind of piece this together now?
I know, right? I think I have another one that we can work in here before we've got to wrap up in a few minutes. Fill in the blank on this one. Terrell Owens' decision not to go to his Pro Football Hall of Fame induction ceremony is blank.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome our
many words come to mind, but I'm going to say par for the course.
Yeah.
He's bizarre. He has been very off the wall in many things he has done through the years. So I guess this just sort of takes the cake. The greatest honor you can possibly receive. And wasn't it T.O., and please correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't it T.O. last year that was whining and complaining about not getting into the Hall of Fame and not getting the respect?
Yeah.
And now you get the honor and you say there are better places for you to be than in Canton the day that you are placed into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He has done everything with T.O. in mind, so I guess this is just par for the course.
Terrell is one of these guys who wants everybody to think that he's misunderstood and everything else, but you're right. I mean, it's just weird, and at the same time, it's in keeping with the way Terrell Owens does things because, like you said, I mean, he's been outspoken criticizing the Hall of Fame for not putting him in, so now he's in. And he's not going to go. And I think that it's something that I hope somebody, I don't know how many friends that he has, because I saw Chris Carter, it was coming out, and he's been critical of Owens deciding to do this. But I hope somebody, because he's got a couple months before this ceremony comes up in early August, hope somebody reaches out to him and says, you know, Terrell, I think you need to reconsider this, because he's got time. This is something that I think he's going to look back on not far from now, and if he doesn't go, he's going to really regret it, because this is the pinnacle. This is you can't get a bigger honor than this in any sport, going into the Hall of Fame, and I think he's going to regret it not long from now. So I hope that he changes his mind and ends up going, but who knows? He's a me guy, and this is a me thing that he's doing, unfortunately.
If you have a life-changing moment that happens, you miss the Hall of Fame festivities. But I guess you don't have to come. He's still going to get in. There's no rule. It's just never happened before.
Yeah, he'll still be inducted. It's just that he won't be there.
He'll still be inducted. He just says there's better places for him to be that particular day. Now, what that is, we don't know. But disappointing, but probably not surprising.
And he doesn't even know. He doesn't even know where he's going to go. He just would rather be someplace else besides Canton, which makes no sense.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Yeah, that's right.
That's going to do it for Rapid Fire tonight. And that's going to do it for Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat for this Thursday. Our program tonight has been brought to you by our good friends at Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Goshen Heart and Vascular, Be the hero your heart deserves. Visit GoshenHeartAndVascular.org. Blackthorn Golf Club and the Blackthorn Card, and Ivy Court Inn and Suites with convenient and unique meeting spaces. You're in with Ivy Court Inn and Suites. I'll be in Comstock Park tomorrow, so, Sean, I will talk to you then.
All right. Sounds good. Call another no-hitter tonight while you're at it.
We'll see what we can do. Well, Johnny Vandemiro. Well, we've got Cubs baseball coming up next. Thanks for joining us on Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.